Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything. Data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Attention BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement and get a $50 bonus every time you refer a friend to BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Ohio only. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Introducing Guinness Nitro Cold Brew Coffee Beer. Blending the smooth, creamy nitro taste of Guinness with hints of coffee, chocolate, and caramel. Guinness Nitro Cold Brew Coffee Beer, your new favorite part of the day. Look for it where Guinness is sold. Must be 21 and over to purchase. Please enjoy responsibly. Diageo Beer Company, New York, New York.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G. Because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
All right, it is Film Study with Ken McCusick. Last week, Ken made me sit here and talk about Brashard Perriman. So this week, I'm bringing in a guest for Ken so that we don't have to talk about Brashard Perriman. Ken McCusick, how you doing?
Life's good, Josh. How about you?
I am doing good, again, because we don't have to talk about Brashard Perriman.
Exciting guest this week, and I am thrilled that you were able to get him to do the show, Josh.
Yeah, so Dominic Foxworth wrote a great article over on The Undefeated about Lamar Jackson. We're a little late to this. It's 2-3 weeks out there. Everyone should go check it out, but let's just jump straight to the interview. Joining us now is the nicest person I know. Dominic Foxworth and his wife Ashley are great people. But Ken, you can go through the Wikipedia of everything that Dominic's done.
We couldn't have Dominic on without a brief run through his resume, which is the most impressive resume you'll ever see for a 35-year-old. He played for the Ravens from 2009 to 2010. As you know, he played 6 total years in the NFL, 3 with the Broncos to start out, and then 1 with Atlanta before he came to the Ravens. Had a really good year in 2009. Of course, most Ravens fans know he got hurt after that, and unfortunately, that was the end of his career in 2010. But since he left football, you hear a lot about professional football players having financial or personal difficulties after they leave the game. But since retiring from the NFL in 2012, Dominic has went on to far greater success with the NFLPA, where he became the president in 2012. He actually, as the vice president, played a lead role in negotiating the 2011 CBA. By the way, tell me when I get anything wrong, Dominic. I don't want to mess this up as I go.
No problem. It's just I always assume whenever I start hearing my own credentials that it's boring people. They don't care. They just want to hear what I got to say now, right?
Well, we're gonna finish up anyway because I think people do want to know this here. You know, he did well with the CBA in 2011 because he was made COO of the National Basketball Players Association in 2014. He, after he left football, got his MBA from Harvard. So that's fantastic in for your kids, hopefully someday. Maintains numerous charitable concerns. Tell us about any of those if you'd like, Dominic. And he's now a writer.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
He's a writer now for The Undefeated and the host on ESPN Radio of the show The Morning Roast. So here's Dominic Foxworth.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm sorry to cut you off. Whenever people start talking about my resume, get to the Harvard part, I always have to throw in there, which Josh knows, that my wife is the reason why I went there. She went to law school there, and when I was looking at going to business school, I was looking at some local business schools because I grew up in the Baltimore area, and she said that she thought I was smart enough to take a shot at the big schools, and I did, and I got in. So she is obviously the brains and the beauty of this relationship, but I can run fast. So I could at some point in my life.
Right.
That's what I got going for me.
But you also got through business school with children, which I don't know how that's possible.
Yeah, I didn't really have the same experience that the other students have. It's like a lot of networking and a lot of going out and drinking and having a good time, but not when you got the kids. I look for any time I can to get some sleep, which any parent knows that drill. You're just trying to find a couple hours to yourself to get some quiet and get some sleep and maybe get some work done.
Right. Now, I've wanted to get you on one of my podcasts for a while, but it's always been looking for the right opportunity. And a couple weeks ago, the Ravens drafted Lamar Jackson, which I think surprised a lot of Raven fans. One, that he was still available at the time the Ravens made the pick, and second, that the Ravens actually kind of got aggressive and went after a quarterback. You wrote an article about for The Undefeated, basically about how Lamar Jackson could kind of change the game of football if given the opportunity. So were you surprised with Lamar Jackson ending up in Baltimore?
Yeah, I was shocked. I didn't think he would slide as far as he did in the draft, so that certainly surprised me. So many teams, it seemed to have an opportunity, and the one that really shocked me, I thought New Orleans was moving up when they ended up moving up to get the defensive end. I thought they were moving up to get him, and then he just kept sliding and sliding, and I think the Ravens were really smart to get him where they got him because I think, one, he's super talented, and he's obviously a Heisman Trophy winner, so he has the ability to be great in the league. But also, the fact that they got him inside the first round is really important for that fifth-year option if he turns out to be the type of player that we all think he could be. If you get a player in the second round, you then don't have the ability to exercise the fifth-year option, which gives you that player for an extra year with more time to negotiate. So it was really smart. I think it was savvy move by Ozzie. It was quite a coincidence because the two pieces I was working on, written pieces I was working on going up to the draft, was one was Lamar Jackson and the other one was Ozzie Newsome. He gave me a couple of extended interviews. I got to talk to him about his life and the things outside of football, which is not something he normally does, as all Ravens fans know that Ozzie is kind of very private, but he gave me those interviews, and so it was kind of cool coincidence that both of those pieces came out around the draft, and they ended up kind of being related without me knowing it. So I was really excited for it to work out, and I grew up in Baltimore. I'm from Baltimore, so I was happy. I'm always happy when things work out in that city and for that team.
All right, terrific. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about Jackson, and in your own words, I know you guys have done a lot of research for the article, clearly also quoted some scouts in the process, about what you think will work well about Jackson at the NFL level, particularly as a passer, I'm interested.
Yeah, no, it was, I have to be honest, there's a lot of, and I think it's just human nature, when you see something that kind of looks similar, you start to group things, and I think I and a lot of people were guilty of that also, where you see Lamar Jackson and you see all the highlights of him and you start to think of him as a quarterback who's like Michael Vick. And obviously he has that ability, but he's also a pretty disciplined passer. While he's not super accurate, I think that's a legitimate concern that all the scouts that I talked to and Matt Hasselbeck, like a former quarterback, said that accuracy is something that you can improve with coaching. But the things that most quarterbacks have a hard time with getting in the league is sitting in the pocket and having patience, particularly the quarterbacks who have the athleticism to get out and make a play. But that's not something he had trouble with. When you watch him play, he sits in the pocket and he goes through his progressions. And as everybody knows, I'm sure anybody who is a Ravens fan has probably already looked into the idea that he or understands that he was under Bobby Petrino, who was an NFL-style offensive coach. And those were the principles that he was running the entire time he was in college. And I was really surprised, because when you get an athlete like that in college, you're tempted to go to the spread stuff, like Marcus Mariota used to run at Oregon, that sort of stuff. But that's not the offense that they ran. They really ran kind of a traditional deep passing NFL-style offense, an offense that's probably more NFL than a lot of NFL teams, honestly. So many more NFL teams have gone to these spread short passing games to reduce the turnovers. And so I think Lamar Jackson, if the Ravens look to do that and look to build around him, I think he'll be a standout in this league, because while he hasn't mastered the pocket passing, he has an understanding and he has the ability to kind of execute in the way that you would expect a guy who doesn't have his athleticism to execute. So I was really high on him. I know that it's not a popular opinion, but there's some respected scouts who thought he was the best quarterback in the draft, and I don't think that's too far-fetched, honestly.
Yeah, well, there's certainly some difference of opinion on that, and even within the top four guys who went, that Mayfield or Rosen or who might have been number one. I'm sorry, Josh, I cut you off.
No, I was just going to say that concept of him being more of a pocket passer is encouraging, because it's really hard to look at Lamar Jackson and Joe Flacco and see it as Lamar Jackson as a guy who can even back up a Joe Flacco offense. And what you're saying is that he can play that type of offense, but when things break down, he's still got that speed.
Yeah, I mean, I think if anything, if you watch I watched all his plays from the last couple of seasons, I think what happens is we see his highlights. If you aren't a Louisville football fan, or you don't watch Louisville football, or you're not a scout, what you see of Lamar Jackson is his highlights. And the highlights, the things that he does that are unique, are those running plays. And you don't necessarily see him dropping back in the pocket completing intermediate passes, because that's not as flashy. But when you watch him, that is what he does. And more often than not, the long explosive running plays were off of design runs. They're not necessarily the kind of look one way, first receiver's not open, and he scrambles and runs. That's just not what he does. When you watch him play, and I'm sure fans will see more of this now that he's a part of the Ravens, he goes across the field and back with his reads before he tucks and runs. So, like, there are plays where he scrambles, but it's normally after he's already gone through his entire progression. So I don't see that being a problem. And like I said, he's not a perfect prospect, or he probably wouldn't have slid as far as he did in the draft. Where where the issues are for him is not necessarily reading the defense, because anybody who remembers last year's draft, that was the knock on Deshaun Watson, and I rewatched probably four or five of Deshaun Watson's games from his senior year, and he was actually, like, literally bad at reading coverages. He would throw to the wrong place all the time, and particularly in that national championship game where he had that great drive at the end to win, it was really, he wasn't throwing to the right spot at any point. He just was better than the guys out on the field. You don't have that issue as much with Lamar Jackson. So like I said, he's not a perfect prospect. The major issue is his accuracy, and that is, like, it's erratic. So that's a problem, because this league is one where the coverage will be tighter. And if you're a little bit off where it might have been incomplete in college, it'll be an interception in the NFL, which is unacceptable. So if he can't get that together, he won't survive in the league. But I think that, and again, I'm not a quarterback and I'm not a quarterback coach, but obviously interviewed a lot of scouts and former NFL quarterbacks, and they believe that that's something that can be addressed. And he has arm strength. That's not really something you can coach, but he has the type of arm strength that seems effortless. He can throw it down the field. And the thing that he does best as far as passing concern is deep balls. He throws some really great corner routes and deep post, which I think complements his running skills quite well. So he has enough talent and enough like elite skills that you just won't find anywhere, that I think a good coaching staff can build packages around those abilities to put defenses in binds. And as long as the Ravens defense, I think it stands up to the Ravens defensive pedigree, I think that team will be good for years to come. And I think you don't get a quarterback in the first round, and I've been a supporter of Joe for quite some time, and I would like to see him do well, but you don't get a quarterback in the first round, and I think Joe probably knows this. The writing's on the wall. You don't go and draft a QB in the first round unless you're planning on making a transition. So I suspect Lamar Jackson will get some time at some point throughout this season, and Joe Flacco probably won't be back in the future.
You mentioned the coaching staff. And you're very familiar with the Baltimore Ravens organization. Do you think the current coaching staff is prepared to groom a guy like Lamar Jackson?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when they were sniffing around Colin Kaepernick, I think it was because they liked that athleticism. They went away from him for reasons, not because of his ability. And I think as Marty Mortenwig is a guy who's had a lot of success with dual threat quarterbacks. So I think that this is the direction that they want to go. I think they were delighted to see Lamar Jackson available to build this around him, but I think that's where they wanted to go because, it's the direction that the league is going. If you watch the Super Bowl last year, or not even just the Super Bowl, all the playoffs.
Okay, so next question I had, Dominique, was regards to what the Ravens have done this offseason to try and build some talent around him on offense. And the Ravens had a big decision to make when they drafted at 15th, and they passed on Derwin James. They waited, traded down twice, 25 drafted a tight end, so I guess they still figured Jackson had not dropped into their value range at that point. Then, of course, they traded back in to get Jackson. But the fact that they got two tight ends and two offensive tackles in addition, including one I think is probably going to be ready this year, particularly the tight ends for the young quarterback who is extending a play a lot. Do you think that'll be specifically a significant asset? And do you think that they were already planning for Jackson, perhaps even when they drafted Hurst?
Yeah, honestly, I don't think that they were. I could be wrong, but I think everyone was kind of shocked. Well, I guess not everyone, but I can't imagine. If they wanted Jackson, I think they would have drafted him there. Not to say that they didn't want him. I think that they were lucky to have him drop to where he did, but I don't think that they were getting the tight ends in order to prepare for Jackson. I think that was a fortunate coincidence. But I do think that, tight ends have always been, even prior to this coaching regime, tight ends have been a big part of what they do offensively in Baltimore. So I think the tight end situation for Joe Flacco hadn't worked out because of several injuries over the past year. So I think that's what they were probably trying to do more than anything, is give him the tight ends that he needs to feel comfortable. And again, we talked about how a lot of RPOs and quarterback running is offense of the future. I think two tight end sets is also kind of offense of the future in some degree. I know it doesn't sound like it necessarily, because we all think about getting more speedy receivers out there, but what you're able to do with two tight ends on the field, the type of mismatches you're able to create, particularly when you get a tight end like Hurst, who
is really kind of a big receiver. I think those type of dilemmas that you create for defense, because it's hard to find someone who is fast enough to stay with a guy like that and big enough to be able to fight off the block from a guy like that. So it's a little different when you have a receiver out there. You put a receiver out there, you know that you put a corner out there to cover him. Put a tight end out there, you're not sure if you use a linebacker or a nickel corner or a safety. And no matter who you use, the tight end has some sort of either physical or athletic advantage if they're the type of tight end that you need and to have those type of mismatches.
Right, and I think that's really well known for both these guys. In fact, Andrews is a guy who either can split out or go tight. And at OU, he didn't do a lot of inline blocking, but I think he'll probably do a little bit more of it in Baltimore. But that really does force that question. If you treat him as a wide receiver, you bring on the nickel. If you don't, you stay in the standard. And then obviously you create more mismatches there. But you know, with Collins and having a good running game, they want to run with a single back in the nickel, and they also have a good fullback if they want to go that way as well. So I'm excited about that, and I'm excited about how Jackson can contribute to this. I did want to ask you something, going back to your CBA experience, because obviously there's a lot less opportunity to coach players in an on-field environment now. And we've seen some players go outside the system to get strength and body sculpting training they need, or position-specific coaching that they need. Ryan Jensen last offseason did a great job of molding himself into a good NFL center and got rewarded for it this year. Joe Flacco has been criticized for not taking the offseason doing as much as he can with passing camps with his own receivers. So my question for you is, how would you advise Jackson to proceed in terms of any offseason activities that might be self-directed?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I certainly don't want to get in the business of advising any player to do to make any of those type of decisions. Like, that's something I think is for them to work out for themselves. I think there's something to be said for taking time away. And we talked about, at least when you were talking about my resume early on, about transition. And I think that's a lot of what we were thinking about in trying to give guys longer off season, is we all are disappointed and sad, and some people judgmental of players who transition out of the league poorly and end up in bad situations. But then we don't give them the opportunity and the time they need to go back to school, to get internships, to explore other avenues. So if players can use that time however they see fit, and I think that it's not perfect, but it works out to benefit some players and it doesn't others. But I think that opportunity being there is a good thing for them to have. So somebody like Jackson, who's just coming into the league, suspect that whether I was going to advise him or not, he would probably be trying to get as much knowledge as he possibly can, and that's probably true of all the players. That's what they should do.
Okay. All right. It's a great point about adapting to your life after the NFL. I'm going to put you back in a position here and ask you how you do this. Now, Lamar Jackson's a quarterback, and you're at cornerback, covering the other team's star receiver. How would you be approaching that assignment with regard to having Jackson in the pocket? What do you need to do differently as a corner?
Yeah, so that's the difficulty in that situation for a corner is that guy who has that type of athleticism is going to extend the play. If he scrambles and runs for yards, that's not necessarily my concern until he crosses the line of scrimmage. As a defensive back, your concern and what is really a pain, frankly, is him scrambling with the ball but not crossing the line and still throwing it. So the tough thing about, and I think we talked about this a bit in the piece, but the tough thing about having that type of quarterback is you really can't play man-to-man against a quarterback like that, because in man coverage, everyone turns their backs to the quarterback, which means once he gets past the D-line, there's nobody there to tackle him until the free safety or someone sees him. But if you go zone, the tough thing is with zone is if he starts to scramble, the way that you adjust is you then convert to man-to-man. And if you're in zone, which means that you're not going to be right next to the receiver, once he starts to scramble, you're 4 or 5 yards away from the receiver. So you're in kind of a catch-22 with that type of guy when they start to move with the ball. So I think as a defensive, you could ask any defensive coordinator in the league, the guys that they hate to prepare for most are those type of guys, because they're unpredictable and their abilities kind of defy the rules of offensive football, because they have the athleticism to change. It's like you blitz. A blitz is not one of the things you anticipate as a defensive back. It's like, all right, we're running a blitz, so the ball has to come out quicker. That's not true when you have a guy back there who is capable of breaking tackles and outrunning all the blitzers and it just makes everything a lot more unpredictable. So it's a lot harder to prepare for a guy like that.
Okay, fascinating. How about spy concepts? Well, do you think he'll face some of that? And if so, how can he exploit that?
Yeah, so the spy is another thing. Again, so if you have a spy, you have to take the spy from somewhere. You don't get to bring in a 12th man. So if you take the spy, you take a spy out of coverage, that makes your coverage a little weaker. You take a spy off the D-line, that makes your rush a little weaker. So that, again, advantages the offense. And when there's a guy like Lamar Jackson, he is faster than, presumably, he's going to be faster than any defensive line spy you have, any linebacker spy that you have, which means that you might have to put an extra DB in to spy him. And then you put an extra DB in the game to spy him, then you're a little lighter against the run. So, again, it's just that no one's quite figured out the perfect defenses for these type of quarterbacks because they change everything. Again, they break all the rules of offensive football. So you can't – if you have a guy who's a pocket passer – and, of course, nobody really wants to face Tom Brady because he's tremendous. But you know what you don't have to worry about? You don't have to worry about the read option with Tom Brady. So if he is going to hand the ball off on a shotgun-type run, then you can attack the running back, and you can disregard him. That's not necessarily true with a guy like Lamar Jackson. You have to leave at least one defender outside so you can't load the box to stop the run. It'll be tremendous, I think. The person who would be most excited about that is Collins or whoever is running the ball in that situation is you get an extra blocker when you have a quarterback that people are afraid of.
There you go. Yeah, it's interesting. The spy concept, I think the Ravens only used it once during the last decade or so, and it was against Wilson again, the game against Seattle a couple of years ago, and he shredded them in 2015, yeah. I think it was. And they used about seven snaps of Brooks as a spy in that game. But yeah, it's very rarely seen these days, but just don't do it.
I mean, it's hard because it's rarely used. So that's how you get good at something is you do it enough. If you don't do it a lot, it's hard when you have – I keep saying that's another thing and it's another thing. But, again, these guys kind of break the rules of football. So another thing that you have to be concerned about is when you're preparing – or another thing that the opponent has to be concerned about is when you're preparing to play against a quarterback like Lamar Jackson, there's several different plays that you have to practice, that you have to devote the limited practice time to going over that you may or may not see. And you don't see them every week. So like a curl flat passing concept or a deep dig or a dagger route, corner routes, like these are things that you see every week. So you practice them in training camp. You practice them just about every week. You practice against them. So then when they come up, it's no problem. But if you have this like an elaborate running quarterback zone read type of system, that's not something you see every week. And so you have to devote a significant amount of your practice time to preparing for it, which makes you a little bit less prepared for everything else. So even if you just put Lamar Jackson in for a series here or there, that's going to help Joe Flacco in the long run because it's going to make the teams a little less prepared for the things that he does.
So a special package, one per week or four plays per week or some such?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, you don't even have to do them every week because normally when preparing for games, you do the – people analyze the film of the previous 4 weeks. So if you throw Lamar out on the field every couple of games, that is enough to worry the other coaching staff enough that they're going to dedicate a significant amount of their coaching time to prepare for Lamar Jackson, and then he may never see the field. So, I mean, even just drafting him, I think, improves their team.
So if you were John Harbaugh, how would you use him? Would you use him that way of every couple weeks, bring him in for one play, even though it's that type of thing that once he goes on the field, guys know what you're doing, but they still got to prepare for it? Or would you have him as a straight Joe Flacco backup? Or, of course, the people who talk about putting two quarterbacks on the field and putting him out there as a wide receiver. What would you do with him in his first year?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely – the one thing I wouldn't do is do the whole wide receiver thing. I understand the allure of doing something like that, but I don't think that you do that with someone who you think could potentially be your long-term fix at quarterback. But I think the answer to all those questions is determined by how he plays in training camp. So, like, I wouldn't even rule out necessarily starting him. Like, it just depends on how he plays in training camp. And if he plays well enough to earn himself some time, then you give him some time. And if he doesn't play well enough, then you don't. I think it's as simple as that.
So despite the Joe Flacco contract, you still go into this preseason with a quarterback competition?
I'm not sure. I think it should be assumed, I think, that Joe Flacco is a starter. Like, he's a Super Bowl champion quarterback. There's a lot of money dedicated to him, at least for this season. So I think that should be the plan. But if for some reason, I think anybody who's been around sports knows that the team knows who's the best and the team knows who they want out there. So if for some reason, and I think it's probably far-fetched, but if he comes into camp and he's just blowing everyone out of the water, like, the team is not going to allow you to continue with a quarterback who's not as good. I think it's unlikely, but I think that you have to remain with that possibility open. But
I'll just say, in some sense, Joe's salary for this year is a sunk cost. They're not going to cut him before the season starts, so they're going to hold him. So it's a sunk cost. Next year, yes, they have a way to decide whether they want to pay $16 million in 1 year or $8 million each over two, but they don't have a way really to get rid of his salary. And then you're just in season, and it's who's the better guy for the job. So that leads to my next question, which was, and really my last, which is, if they decide to make the transition and they decide, well, either by losing or by ineffectiveness or by whatever reason they decide they're ready to make the transition during the season, how long a transition period in terms of installing, you know, small differences to the offense that would maximize his effectiveness would that take? Could they do it in 1 week, or is it something that they install 10 plays per week for three weeks, or how long would it take to do something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an offensive guy, so I think it's probably, my speculation on that is probably only marginally better than yours or anybody else's. I think that it's to their benefit, the offense that he ran in college. So I think he is capable of running the same plays as Joe Flacco, obviously. Like, they don't have to throw the offense out altogether. I think that's what his experience was like in college, was he kind of ran an NFL-style offense, and then they would throw some quarterback running plays in there on top of it. They didn't necessarily mesh together very well. I think it probably takes a while to build an entire offense that kind of is cohesive and all that stuff seems to fit well together, but I think they could immediately put him in, and I'm sure throughout training camp they'll be practicing those type of quarterback run plays, and that's the only difference. And to be honest, there's not much change that has to be done, because the quarterback running plays are the same as running back running plays to the offensive line. You just call a zone or a trap or a wham or power. You just call it the same. The blocking schemes are the same. What happens in the backfield is just different. So it's between the quarterback and the running back just trying to figure out their steps and those things that changes. So I honestly don't think it'll be that complicated to put them in. But if they're trying to do some of the more advanced RPO-type things that you saw in the Super Bowl, I think that might take a little more time.
Great. Well, Dominique, thanks for joining us and really helping us understand from, I guess, inside the game what a guy like Lamar Jackson could do for Baltimore and the Ravens. I'll give you an easy question to wrap this up. Do you miss playing?
No, not at all. Yeah, I mean, every now and then I'll look up and see, like, some of the excitement leading up to the game, and like, it'd be cool to be out there, and then the game actually starts and people start hitting each other, and I'm like, I'm good on that.
Right.
I did my time. It was fun while it lasted, but I'm old now. I have three kids, and it's more fun to watch than it would be to play at this point.
Right. Do your knees just ache a little bit watching the game?
My knees, everything. I remember after I tore my ACL and I was on the sidelines of the game, it was the first kind of major injury that I had where I missed significant time, and I was watching the game like, what the hell are they doing? Like, this is really violent. It's just something when you're out there, you don't notice it, but if anybody who's watched it on TV, it's an entirely different experience than if you are, I mean, even in the stadium, it's a different experience than if you're down there. If you ever get a chance to get down there close to the game, it feels a lot faster, and as I'm sure you see, coaches can't get out the way or players can't get out the way on the sideline when plays come their direction. It's a fast, crazy game that I enjoy much more as a spectator now, and I'm not looking to get back out there.
Right. I remember after that injury, you had a slight limp, and you said, I do not want to have this for the rest of my life.
Nah, Yeah, I've managed to dodge having it for the rest of my life. I'm sure that all the arthritis will catch up with me at some point, but for now, no one could tell that I'm a football player. I just walk like a normal person. I'm about normal size. I like normal life. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, your resume is anything but normal. So, Dominique, thank you for joining us. Say hi to Ashley for me and have fun with the kids.
You got it, man. Thank you.
Wasn't that great to talk to Dominique Foxworth about Lamar Jackson? I think he's completely changed my mind on Lamar Jackson. I want to remind people to follow him on Twitter at Foxworth24 and just thank him for joining us on our little podcast.
Yeah, it was terrific. Inside football. Love to talk that with Dominique. And he clearly really understands the game at a level. He says he's not an offensive guy, but he really understands a lot of offensive commentary when he's talking about how the offensive line blocks a certain way and then it's all the running backs behind them. All the stuff he could tell us about, you know, how you react to a cornerback, to a running threat. Fascinating stuff.
Yeah, he's way smarter than us. And yeah, whenever he says he doesn't quite understand, he still knows better than me. So that was wonderful. Ken, let's point people towards Russell Street Report, where they can get this podcast as well as previous podcasts like the one I mentioned earlier, with where we talked to guys about Breshad Perriman. We talked to a guy who's using Madden to look at how the Ravens play.
How it translates, how the Ravens plays translate to Madden. Yes,
right.
A very good guest last week. I do encourage people to go back and listen to some commentary from some new analysts who are interested in doing that. You can follow me on Twitter at Film Study Ravens, at RSR. On Russell Street Report. You can see my archive there with lots of stuff, including all of the podcasts Josh and I have done. They're also available by subscription, right, Josh? How do they get them there?
Yeah, go on over to iTunes and subscribe to Film Study with Ken McCusick and leave us a review. Click little 5 stars and write a comment in there for us. It really helps new people find the show. And as we are preparing this preseason and getting ready, I guess off-season, to get ready for the preseason, the more we can get review-wise up there is really going to help us as we're going into this new season and people are out there looking for Ravens talk, especially with the Orioles struggling.
There you go. So 13 hits today and no runs for the Orioles.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about the Orioles.
Right.
I talk about the Orioles enough on Section 336. I don't want to talk about it here. I do want to plug something new. I started a new podcast this week. In fact, it's so new, it's not in iTunes yet. It's going to be in iTunes probably tomorrow or Tuesday, Wednesday, something like that. But go on over to section336.com right now, and you can check out the very first episode of a new podcast called Ghost Runners. And here's what it is. It is baseball, because I have a baseball obsession. But I do this podcast with my wife, and my wife is not a baseball fan. So what I get to do is we sit down here, and I share baseball stories, myths, and legends with her as just a normal, common folk. I get to share these great stories from the history of baseball with her, and she learns. And this is what happens when my girls don't care about baseball, so I can't pass these stories down to my girls. So I'm passing them down to the listeners. And I'm really excited about it. We're making every episode under 30 minutes, so they're nice, short, compact stories. And the very first episode is about my favorite urban legend in baseball, which is the 1997 Cal Ripken, Kevin Costner issue, rumor, urban legend, and the lights going out at Camden Yards. So I get into that. If you're not a Baltimore Orioles fan, you don't know that story, so check it out. If you are an Orioles fan, you know that story, even though you don't know why you know that story. So check
all right,
that
looking
out.
Looking forward to it.
Check it out. It's up now. Ghost Runners. It's on section336.com and iTunes in the next day or two.
That's wonderful. And your regular show is, you're still doing that. You didn't stop doing it, right?
Nope. Section 336 every week, every Monday night is talking Orioles and Ravens, but a lot of Orioles. Ghost Runners is nationwide, not limited to the Orioles.
It sounds like a great program, Josh. I'd be happy to come on sometime and talk stories, but I guess the format of that's a little different. You're just kind of talking to your wife.
Yeah, completely different format that I'm just talking to my wife, and we're getting her reactions as just someone. You don't even have to be a baseball fan to listen to these stories. So it's exciting.
That sounds cool.
So, All right, Ken. Well, we will speak in the next week or two as we continue to get ready for the new Ravens season.
At Lowe's, we're your go-to for great gardening values every day. That's why we've lowered our price on select bagged mulch, now starting at just $2.88 a bag. Mulch helps prevent weeds and retains moisture, and when you put it down around trees, shrubs, and flower beds, you'll see how beautiful it makes your outdoor space, just in time to welcome back family and friends. Shop online and pick up in-store. Lowe's, home to the best part of summer. Selection and product availability vary by location. While supplies last, U.S. only, excludes Alaska and Hawaii.